They catch our podcast conversations for the curious essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akatra AI. Welcome to this deep dive where we're unpacking a really fascinating and, I think, complex subject, the making of modern French identity.
It's a topic we think we know, but the reality is often quite surprising.
Absolutely. And today we're drawing from two really illuminating works by the scholar Vanessa R. Schwartz. They are Inventing Modern France and its companion, Modern France, A History in Documents.
And this isn't, you know, just a straightforward chronological history.
Right. It's not a list of dates and kings.
Exactly. Our mission here, really, is to give you a kind of shortcut, a way into understanding the profound paradoxes at the very heart of French identity.
Okay, let's unpack that. I mean, we're talking about a nation that champions universal human rights, you know, liberté, égalité, fraternité.
But at the same time, fiercely protects its own unique culture and demands this absolute secular neutrality in public life.
It's that tension. If you've ever wondered why debates over secularism or laïcité get so explosive in France, or why colonialism is still such a raw nerve.
This is the context.
Yeah.
The core idea we're chasing is that French modernity wasn't this gradual, peaceful evolution. It was forged in a series of dramatic ruptures.
A constant reinvention.
A constant and sometimes violent reinvention of what Frenchness even means.
So let's start with our guide for this, Vanessa R. Schwartz. Who is she?
She's a distinguished professor of history and art history at the University of Southern California. And that background, that combination, is really critical to her whole approach.
So what makes her perspective so unique?
It's her interdisciplinary lens. I mean, she's not a historian who's just focused on political treaties or, you know, military campaigns.
She's looking somewhere else.
Yes. She specializes in cultural history, mass media, and urban life. She's interested in how things looked and felt to the everyday people who were living through these massive changes.
That's what makes these sources so rich. I was looking at her earlier work, Spectacular Realities, and it's all about decoding things like early cinema, advertisements.
Even the Paris morgue as a public spectacle. She argues that popular culture, this everyday experience, is just as important as a presidential decree in shaping history.
So you get the historian's rigor, but with an art historian's eye for detail.
Precisely, which makes her uniquely qualified to analyze how France actively constructed its modernity, not just how it was governed, but how its citizens were taught to literally see themselves.
So let's get into the core premise of these works. The conventional narrative is that France is, you know, exceptional, timeless.
A culture just inherited through the centuries. Schwartz just completely challenges that right from the start.
How so?
Her whole argument is that modern French identity was actively constructed. It was created through conscious choices about what to preserve from the past, what to transform, and crucially, what to reject.
Which brings up a fascinating paradox. How could a country so attached to tradition, you know, the language, classical art, also become such a global force for innovative modern culture?
Right. And the answer, she says, is that France developed a distinctly French way of being modern. It was all about this constant negotiation.
Not isolation, then.
No, not at all. It was creative adaptation. They didn't just passively absorb foreign influences, like American mass culture. They took them, transformed them, and made them into something uniquely French.
And the second book, The History in Documents, that really reinforces this, right? It's more of a bottom-up view.
It does. You're not just reading about politicians. You're looking at the raw evidence, personal letters, political cartoons, posters. It shows you how these grand ideas were actually experienced on the street.
It kind of forces you, the listener, to engage with the past like a historian would.
Exactly. You have to draw your own conclusions from this often contradictory evidence.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. The journey starts with that foundational rupture, the French Revolution in 1789.
And Schwartz argues this wasn't some neat, tidy event. It was the opening of a long, violent debate that in many ways is still happening.
A debate about what exactly?
About the very meaning of the revolution. And the core tension was there from day one. Who did liberté, égalité, fraternité actually apply to?
Because we often forget that the famous Declaration of the Rights of Man was immediately challenged.
Immediately. Olympe de Gouges published the Declaration of the Rights of Woman. Petitions came in from enslaved people in the colonies. The universal promise was shown to be contested and, frankly, exclusionary from the very beginning.
And that tension just flows right into the Napoleonic era.
It does. Napoleon consolidates a lot of the revolutionary gains. Mm-hmm. He centralizes the administration, creates a new legal code.
But with some very paradoxical results. I mean, if he's consolidating revolutionary equality, how does the Napoleonic Code end up reestablishing such firm patriarchal authority over women?
That is the fundamental contradiction. The code was modernizing. Yes, it created a unified secular legal framework for all French men. For men. But socially, it was deeply conservative. It made women legal dependents of their fathers or husbands. Mm. So France basically achieved legal modernity at the price of social conservatism.
So if we connect this to the bigger picture, the story of modernization in France is also the story of its capital. Paris becomes this laboratory for modern life.
Absolutely. Yeah. Think about Haussmann's renovations in the mid-19th century, tearing out medieval streets, creating these wide boulevards, the grand department stores.
This wasn't just urban planning.
No, it was social engineering. It created a new consumer culture, a new way of seeing and being seen. It was the physical stage for modernity.
But Frenchness had to be engineered across the whole nation, right? Especially after the trauma of the Franco-Prussian War in 1870.
This is where you can see the construction of identity so clearly. The new Third Republic realized it couldn't rely on old regional loyalties. So the state uses these mass institutions to unify everyone.
Like the school system.
Exactly. Compulsory, free, and secular education. And you can see the agenda in action in that famous school book, the Tour de France par des Enfants.
The story of the two orphans traveling France.
Right. It taught a uniform, patriotic, secular geography and language. Its goal was to forge citizens out of peasants.
And this is where laïcité really becomes cemented. It's more than just secularism, isn't it?
And much more. It's the legal separation of church and state, yes. But it's also this doctrine that mandates total neutrality in the public sphere. The ideal citizen is abstract, religion-free.
It's a defense against division.
A republican defense going all the way back to the battles with the Catholic Church during the Revolution.
But that unified identity would face a huge stress test. The Dreyfus Affair.
A true moment of rupture. The wrongful conviction of a Jewish army captain just tore the country in two.
It was the Republic's ideals versus what?
The military, the traditional Catholic Church, and this virulent anti-Semitism. It pitted justice and human rights against the establishment. The fact that the country fractured so completely showed just how fragile that Republican foundation really was.
And that fragility comes back with a vengeance in the mid-20th century, with decolonization, specifically Algeria.
Yes. The Algerian War from 1954 to 1962. Mm. Schwartz emphasizes this wasn't just some distant colonial conflict. It was experienced as a French civil war.
And the trauma of that, the torture, the military coup attempts, losing the empire, it nearly destroyed the Republic.
It did. And it continues to shape everything today. You can't understand contemporary French debates on immigration, race, and identity without understanding the wound of Algeria.
Meanwhile, back in France, you have this post-war economic boom, the Trente Glorieuses.
The glorious 30 years, yes.
Yeah.
But beneath all that consumerism and conformity, a cultural rebellion was brewing.
Which explodes in May 1968. Now, we often simplify this event, but what was the real intellectual argument of 68?
It wasn't really a rebellion against poverty. It was a revolution against boredom, against conformity, against the authoritarian state of Charles de Gaulle.
So it was a cultural revolution.
Deeply. The students were challenging the very idea that material prosperity was enough. Their slogans like, beneath the cobblestones, the beach, they were attacking the very structures of consumer society.
Which brings us to the present. The headscarf affair, La Fée du Foulard, seems like the ultimate modern case study for all these tensions.
It is. It perfectly pits two competing French legacies against each other. On one side, you have the Republic's commitment to that universalist, secular public space, laïcité.
The abstract, religion-free citizen.
Exactly. And on the other side, you have the right to individual expression and religious freedom for France's diverse post-colonial population. It's the legacy of 1789 clashing with the legacy of colonialism right there in the classroom.
Okay, let's step back for a moment and pull out some of the key themes that run through all of this.
I think the first big one is creative adaptation. This is the survival mechanism of French culture.
It's not about building walls.
Not at all. It's about taking foreign trends like American jazz or new wave cinema and transforming them into something original, something distinctly French. They turn external pressures into internal strengths.
Okay, theme two.
The paradox of universalism. This is so crucial for understanding France today. That revolutionary promise of universal rights has always been haunted by the question of, well, who qualifies?
Who gets to be included?
Exactly. The story of modern France is the ongoing struggle of marginalized groups, women, colonial subjects, immigrants, to be fully included in that promise.
And a third theme.
I would say the centrality of the intellectual. This is so distinctly French. Writers, artists, philosophers, they don't just observe change.
They're active agents in it.
Yes. They provide the intellectual frameworks for political transformation. Culture plays a central political role in a way you just don't see in many other countries.
The book is also full of these really memorable ideas, almost like quotes, that summarize this whole dynamic process.
Yes, Schwartz is great at that. The first one that really stands out is, France did not simply become modern. It invented a distinctly French way of being modern.
That captures the agency, the choice involved. It wasn't just a passive process.
No, it dismantles the idea that modernization is this uniform, global steamroller. France was a generator of modern culture, not just a recipient.
And then there's that paradox you mentioned earlier.
Yes. The paradox of French culture is that it remained most French when it was most open to foreign influences.
That's the creative adaptation piece again. By engaging with American cinema or jazz, they actually reinforced their own cultural relevance.
They were masters of selective appropriation. And finally, there's this one, on the sheer effort involved.
Which is?
Modern French identity was not discovered but constructed, not inherited but actively created through conscious choices.
Choices about what to keep, what to change, and what to get rid of. It really underscores that Frenchness is an ongoing political and cultural project.
It requires constant work.
So, what does this all mean for us? How can you, the listener, apply these insights?
Well, the most direct application is a kind of masterclass in critical thinking. By focusing on the raw documents, Schwartz teaches you to always question the official top-down story.
So next time you see a headline about a crisis in France, or anywhere really, look for the documents.
Look for the protest signs, the political cartoons, the public reaction. Get the fuller picture.
Secondly, this really helps in understanding contemporary global debates.
It does. France's struggle to reconcile its universalist model of citizenship with multiculturalism is a microcosm of conflicts happening everywhere. Understanding the deep roots of laïcité helps you navigate those debates on a global scale.
And finally, it offers a model for thinking about cultural policy.
Yes. Her analysis of things like the Ministry of Culture shows the powerful, if sometimes controversial, role the state can play in protecting cultural distinctiveness in a globalized world. It's a reminder that culture is never just entertainment.
It's a political tool.
It's a political tool.
For me, what really stands out is that the French example isn't a model to be copied, but maybe a framework for thinking.
A framework for thinking about cultural adaptation. Exactly. It shows that tradition and innovation aren't enemies. They can be productive partners if you mediate them with thought and effort.
And I think the most valuable lesson is that a nation's history isn't a settled story. It's a living, breathing argument.
Absolutely. The key insight is that Frenchness requires this constant active reinvention. It's a dynamic process that is still unfolding today, often with a lot of friction.
It's a powerful reminder that history isn't just dusty old facts. It's a continuous series of decisions about what to preserve, what to transform, and what to reject.
An essential deep dive for anyone curious about how these powerful ideas shape a national identity.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akacha Foundation.